Okay, and we're back on the record. And again, Andrew Reeves, Kitsap County Hearing Examiner. It's June 23rd, 2022, now at just after 2 o'clock. And we are here on number 2006035, the WDFW proposal related to providing a public access, essentially space to Lake area. So with that, when we stopped before our lunch break, we had gone through the public testimony portion of the hearing. And now that we are back, we are going to turn back to our applicant team, applicant representative, to provide any response they deem appropriate to what they've heard today. And then after that, we'll also go to the county to see if they had additional thoughts they wanted to share. So if we can go to Alexandra Lawton, I think, to start, or maybe she's
Mr. Pinesco.
Okay, sorry, I was going to say if she was directing traffic, but go Pinesco.
Thank you, Mr. Hearing Examiner. Just two short points. I won't be testifying, so you don't need to swear me in. The name spelling for the record is Joe Panesco, P-A-N-E-S-K-O. I am senior counsel with the Attorney General's Office, one of the attorneys who advises and represents the Washington State Department of Fish and Wildlife. So one of the legal procedural issues that Mr. Bonin raised and some of the different written materials from others have raised is the name spelling, and they've asserted significant due process or other procedural violations because of the difference in the name spelling. And there is a Washington State Committee on Geographic Names, and they actually have a list of definitive and true spellings of some geographic locations and items in Washington State. That's in WAC 237-990 is their appendix of the list of their official names. This lake is not listed in that official list of names. So there is not, from what I can tell, a legally official spelling of the lake. What I can tell you is that Washington State Department of Fish and Wildlife has a freshwater fishing rule that covers many water bodies. And it does expressly list and address this lake and its rule, which is a public record, which is in fact law of the state when it's properly adopted as a rule, is spelled T-A-H-U-Y-A in its rule. So to the extent the department is using that spelling, it has a public rule which has been legally adopted using that spelling. That citation for that Fish and Wildlife WAC is WAC 220-312-040. Subsection 276. There are that many subsections because every subsection is a specific water body. So that's the spelling issue procedurally. And then just one other, you know, you've heard numerous comments about the dam and why isn't the state paying for the dam. The 2011 ruling from the Kitsap County Superior Court, page 3 of the memorandum decision, which you have in your exhibits, has one statement that points out in 1963, a predecessor in interest to members of the community club, William Hobson, obtained permission from the state to construct a dam impounding water into Huya. Approximately half of the department's lot was flooded as a result. If the individual behind the formation of the dam had desired to obtain a legal commitment from the state to contribute towards the future costs of maintaining that dam, that would have been the time to create such a legal expectation and relationship. And for whatever reason, perhaps because the state may have said, go ahead and flood our property, we won't even ask you to charge for an overflow easement. I don't know. It's pure speculation. I haven't dug into the historic record about that. But it is, in fact, addressed in that small tidbit of the memorandum decision. And those are the legal points that I wish to make. If you don't have any other questions, I can sit down.
Sure. Mr. Pinesco, just in terms of the notice concern, because you are an attorney, generally speaking, you know, notice is something that is supposed to be reasonably calculated to ensure that those might be interested in a particular matter are apprised of that matter and when any kind of administrative hearing on that matter would occur. Am I correct in assuming your position would be that the discrepancy in the names, whether, you know, there is one or not, as it were, is in essence a moot point because folks clearly did receive notice and there wasn't significant confusion about what this related to? I mean, is that part of the thought there?
Yes.
Okay. Anything else you wanted to share, Mr. Vanessa? Nope. Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay. And this is Alexandra Lawton again. Thank you. And yes. I swore you in earlier, but go right ahead.
I first off want to say that we really, as Washington Department of Fish and Wildlife, we do appreciate everyone's comments and concerns here. As part of the process, I really appreciate those comments and concerns. There were a lot of good points brought up and points that can be taken outside of this hearing and taken back to my team and addressed like with my team. I did want to point out a couple of things. The trees that were called out being marked along the roadway were not marked by Washington Department of Fish and Wildlife. This is the first notice I've even heard of those trees being marked specifically. I'm not sure if that was a local utility district that did that or not, but those are not the trees that we marked, and those are not the trees that we plan on removing. Those trees we were actually leaving in place to help provide some screening and some more shade from the road. So swimming at public access sites is not necessarily prohibited. It is not proposed as part of this project, but it is not prohibited either. So that could occur, but the conditions there are not very conducive to swimming. I do understand that. It's not part of the proposal. Again, WDFW is committed to working with the community, and I encourage you, anybody in the community to contact me or contact somebody at WDFW if another contact, and we can get talking about this. We do want to work with you guys. In comments to the cultural resource consultations, cultural resources under 21-02 were completed for this project, and the cultural resources program, the Tribal Historic Preservation Officers and DAP should have copies of that letter. And addressing the...
Hello. On that point, just to clarify, am I correct in assuming that as part of the SEPA review that WDFW performed as the lead agency, that the various tribal entities were provided notice and an opportunity to comment, and then the cultural resources survey or whatever occurred, that was part of the SEPA process. Is that accurate?
That is correct. Okay. And then in reference to the eagles, the potential eagles nesting there and the other birds nesting there, a biologist will be on site during construction to identify any bird nests and wildlife that may be affected during construction and to mitigate those impacts.
Sure. Sorry, on that particular point, because you're with WDFW, you probably have some expertise. This issue does come up a lot in hearings that I preside over, and my understanding is that the eagles are no longer on the endangered list. They're technically still protected to a certain extent, but we've almost done such a good job in bringing them back that they're now in some areas of Washington almost problematic to the extent of their impact on other species. Is that an accurate assessment?
I can't speak to, I guess we're gonna have Brian Calkin come up and he can address that question.
Sure.
My name is Brian.
Do you swear or affirm to tell the truth in the testimony you give here today?
I do.
Okay.
My name is Brian Calkins, BrianCalkins. And I'm the Regional Wildlife Program Manager for Region 6, which includes oversight of our land management functions, which is why I'm here today. You were talking about bald eagles, and they are federally protected still. But I wouldn't go so far as to make the statement that they're becoming a big problem in places, which is where I thought maybe I heard you going with your statement. So that's why I jumped up.
Sure, I apologize. I didn't mean to imply that they're a nuisance or anything. I just meant to explain that the 30 plus years of efforts by, you know, lots of volunteers and members of the public have been a huge success, to the extent that the bald eagle is no longer, endangered at this point, or listed right. under the Endangered Species Act or ESA, correct?
Yeah.
Okay. And then in terms of while we have you up here, there were folks that had concerns over impacts on wildlife. Do you have any additional specific thoughts you wanted to share, Mr. Coggins?
Yeah, in terms of the development of the site, and really it gets to the nature of our concern about the concerns that we've heard from the community. We kept our development very minimal and small, and it's designed for very small boats, hand carried to the water. And I really think that that type of watercraft is really going to have a very minimal effect on the wildlife that uses the lake and the surrounding area.
Okay, thank you for your thoughts, sir.
Yep.
Thank you. Okay, and then so I also wanted to address, I believe James Longmate referenced the 2020 habitat management plan that was submitted as part of the application process. I did want to address that has been revised and a more accurate count of trees has been done. So far we plan on removing 24 trees, not all right along the roadway. They're throughout the site, and there's the minimum necessary to be able to build this. And this will open up the site a little bit and provide some sunlight, but it'll also provide some habitat, some areas that we can improve the habitat below. And with that, I was going to turn it over to Caitlin if you didn't have any other questions.
No, go ahead.
Hello.
Hi. Just for the audio, can you tell us who you are one more time?
Yes, Caitlin Keyhart with DFW.
And you were sworn in earlier, but go right ahead.
That's correct. Just as Alex said, we do appreciate everyone's questions and comments. We can tell that they come from a real place of concern. I think that I commend all of the citizens that showed up and did their homework today and researched this. And I think that's very, very admirable. And that's really what we want to see through the public process. So I would like to clarify a few things. The variance that we are requesting is to construct within the 110-foot wetland buffer. It is not to reduce or eliminate that buffer. That 110-foot buffer is required by the county code. We determined that buffer reduction or averaging was not an option for this site. That is something that commonly occurs on other sites that would have decreased the mitigation we needed. And in fact, we decided to not do that so that we could provide the full amount of mitigation that's required for our proposed development. We've created that mitigation plan to address the buffer impacts that are unavoidable. We've minimized impacts to the extent possible by considering light, noise, stormwater management, and human disturbance, again, as much as possible on this site. We've provided area-based quantities in the mitigation plan, and that updated plan that Alex referenced shows that there is 8,465 square feet of buffer impact, and we are proposing 11,533 square feet of mitigation in the form of buffer enhancement on site. This results in a ratio of 1.36 to 1, which shows buffer mitigation is proposed in excess of the impacts proposed on the site. As Alex referenced, we are planning to remove only 24 trees, again, only the ones that are necessary, and only four of which exceed 2 feet in diameter. The rest are 2 feet DBH diameter, breast height, or lower. Of those, as part of the mitigation plan, we're proposing to plant 251 plants with additional native seeding on the site. Of those 251 plants, 150 are tree and shrub species. This results in a ratio of 6.25:1 woody vegetation replacement. And multiple people today have mentioned that there is a lack of understory on the site. This planting plan, including these shrub and tree species, will create a new vegetation strata that does not currently exist on site. This new strata will provide additional and improved functions in certain areas that the wetland buffer does not currently provide. And some of those functions are, and we've talked about flooding from the site before. So just for example, large trees do not provide very much floodwater attenuation or sediment filtering, whereas smaller stemmed species will provide those functions at they have a better capacity to provide those functions than large old growth, older trees do. Those might provide higher habitat functions. So this is something where we're constantly struggling with which is the better one here. And maybe it's not, again, that's why we're proposing much more than what we are removing. So we are required, I think it's important for everyone to understand that we're required to maintain the buffer mitigation area for 5 years afterwards. And within that 5-year timeframe, we have very specific performance standards that we're required to meet. Those are outlined in the mitigation plan that we've submitted. And they include minimum, no more than 10% of invasive species are allowed to be in that area. And right now I know there's some Himalayan blackberry on site, there's other invasive species. So we would be required to maintain less than 10% coverage of those, which provides additional habitat benefits. In addition to having percent cover and percent survival of the planted species. So we are held to that. And as well we should be, that's a requirement of mitigation plans and it's fairly standard statewide. Yearly monitoring reports have to be submitted to the county as a requirement of that mitigation plan. And within that monitoring report, we will have to outline how we're doing on the site and if we're meeting those performance standards. And if we're not, then we're forced to go back and plant again and maintain invasive species. So there are real things that we're held to in that plan. And we want to see that succeed as much as the public does. We don't like hearing that we have a parcel that's got trash on it, that, you know, is not being properly maintained or can't be, you know, so this gives us an opportunity to enhance that buffer and still provide the public access. We do have every intent to see that that mitigation plan is followed. And we do want to see the site function for wildlife, for the local residents, and for the public. So thank you to everyone for your time and consideration today. And if you have any other questions, I can answer those now.
You would maybe be the person to speak to. There was several folks that talked about weed control. I'm not sure if that is within the lake itself, but
yeah.
In terms of, does WDFW have any involvement, I guess, would be the thought, if you could speak to that issue.
So I believe, and I could be incorrect, but I believe folks were referencing weed control within the lake. Sounds like there might be invasive milfoil there. I'm not positive if that's the species that we're dealing with or not. It sounds like that's more what was the focus. What we are held to with the mitigation plan is controlling invasive species. Not necessarily, there are native weedy species that are actually good that provide herbaceous ground cover. However, I think what was referenced was actually weed control within the lake. And I think that falls more on the same level as the dam maintenance does. However, we figure that out in the future. I think that should be something that we, you know, take back and consider as well.
Okay. Great, thank you. I didn't have other specific questions for you at this time.
Okay, thank you.
And I'm not sure if Ms. Lawton's coming back.
One more.
Go ahead. Do you swear or affirm to tell the truth in the testimony you give here today?
I do. I'm Sergeant Ken Balage. It's going to be Boy Adam Lincoln Adam Zebra Sam. I am the detachment sergeant for Detachment 9, which is responsible for Kitsap and Pierce counties. So I supervise six officers under me. And so I just wanted to kind of provide some clarity about some things and what's kind of running in the back of my mind as far as some of the enforcement questions that were proposed here. And the first thing I want to do is just put some clarity around 911 when we say call that. The reason we emphasize that is all of our officers are dispatched through State Patrol and 911. So if there's an immediate thing that needs to be responded to, that's the most efficient way to get law enforcement on site. So if someone's working, and we work a crazy schedule, it could be any time of day or night. So if there's an officer working and we get reports of possibly, you know, illegal activity going on an access site that nobody should be there, and that goes across the radio, then someone is going to be able to respond versus me giving out my personal number and then not being able to answer that or respond. So that's kind of the starting point for the most emergent things. And we also have a dispatch center through Fish and Wildlife that people can access. So I was talking to Oscar Meyer III. He seems to be the point of contact for the whole homeowners association. And what I'll do is I'll put together a list of resources that they can reach out to and contact us, so they don't have to fight through just trying to figure out, navigate what the best way to get a hold of us is. And in that information, I'll always include my contact information to them, and also the Region 6 Captain Dan Chadwick's information. So at least the homeowners have an internal enforcement connection, so we can help them navigate through this. Each access site has and develops its own personality, so I don't know really what to anticipate with this, but if we have issues that arise, we will certainly do the best we can to help these people manage this site. And when we say we expect them to help enforce it, I just want to say, you know, we appreciate their eyes and ears. So if they see something that looks out of the ordinary, that's what I expect of them. If you have somebody on your dock, please don't confront them, but do call law enforcement, and we will work to deal with you on that type of stuff. So if you had any other questions about how enforcement's going to respond or what information I'm going to pass along to the homeowners to help help them manage this, feel free to ask them right now.
No, I don't have any specific questions for you on this issue. Thank you.
Okay. And I'll just add one other thing. When this does become an access site, we'll set up some proactive type of activity there to really establish our presence in that site. That's one thing I can promise to the homeowners there. So I'll just leave it at that.
Okay, so I, based on that, we have Mr. Heacock back, so we're moving back to the county at this point.
Right, good afternoon. And I'd also like to reiterate what Alex had said as well. I really appreciate the audience participation. I'm really, really glad that we were able to accommodate you all so you could be here and see the proceedings, see the complexity of an ask in relation to permitting, but also understand that we really do have the community at heart. And one of the things that I want to emphasize is, you know, the wetland protections that are within the mitigation plan. We really do feel that the wetland will be protected The related tree marking, I will look into. I have a call into Puget Sound Energy. I have a feeling that Puget Sound Energy has marked the site. One of my photos in the PowerPoint shows the roadway itself. The power lines are on that side. They're on the west side of Gold Creek Road. And so I have a feeling that what's going on is that Puget Sound Energy, their policy is to mark significant trees, and then they'll probably just be limbing. I do not believe there's any road widening or anything like that going on, or power line widening projects, because they would get a permit from Kitsap County related to tree removal. And I'm the tree removal lead, so I haven't heard of anything. So I'm hopeful that it's just maintenance. Again, I will find that out. I'll do a little discovery on that. A couple of other housekeeping points that I want to address as well. We've had mention of bald eagles. The Bald and Golden Eagle Protection Act is the federal act that protects bald and gold eagles, and it was from 1970, I believe. The bald eagle restoration that's occurred has been absolutely remarkable. They are downlisted now to the point of being what we call a species of concern. We do have maps available. We looked at the PSF maps from State Fish and Wildlife that are provided, and we see no evidence of nests, but it's more so about proximity to eagle nests now for management concerns, and not related to specific perching or things like that as well. But I think that the Fish and Wildlife team here will certainly be aware of any kind of eagle use. Typically, bald eagles migrate out of the area in the late summer when food resources go, and but they will be around for the fish season as well. But their nesting season is from typically the beginning of each year through about the midpoint of August. And so again, you know, I think that Fish and Wildlife will be well aware of that and will understand that component. Let's see here, there was one more. Related to tribal notification, I did, and of course in the record is our notice of application. I thought, well, I'm going to print the page. The last page is the contact page of who we notify in relation to permit actions. We can't, of course, compel agencies to respond and to react or to provide comment. There's no requirement for them to comment, but we did notify the tribal folks in what we call our normal and accustomed. And I did provide them, I thought we should have in the record what Kitsap County uses for our normal and accustomed tribal map. And I'll provide that for the record. This is something I've just pulled off my page here, and I'll show you. This is essentially a map of our tribal areas and their tribal boundaries, and what's called the normal and accustomed areas for those individual tribes.
Mr. Hegok, so you wanted to make that Exhibit 53?
Yeah, I would. I think it would be helpful.
Okay, go ahead. Mm-hmm.
So the tribes are notified within the area, the Point-No-Point Treaty Council, the Suquamish Tribe, the Port Gamble Sklallam Tribe, the Squaxin Island Tribe, and the Puyallup Tribe. Those tribal governments are notified of any of any related action. And of course, State Fish and Wildlife, the State Department of Ecology Shoreline Section, which when we completed that site visit that I talked about, those folks, including the Department of Ecology's wetland lead, had all attended that site visit. And, you know, we also make sure that, you know, our public works agencies and things like that are also notified. So in relation to notification, we've done, you know, everything that we can related to notification. I do appreciate as well the community club, where they also had, even though our requirement for noticing is a 800-foot radius around the project itself, that it was actually very beneficial to see the additional people in the community were also notified, and my hat's off to the community club and Mr. Meyer too for also continuing to notice the folks in his neighborhood too. Because our requirement is the 800-foot radius. That had been one comment at one point, but related to that, I think it's important for the record. And then there was one more point I had. Hang on just a sec. Let's see here. Tree removal. The relation to the flood zone, the parking lot and the restroom facility is about 10 feet above the ordinary high water of the lake itself. It's elevated to a point that there would be no flood risk in that area, unless, you know, maybe the dam. I think the dam elevation, though, I think the water level would overtop the dam anyway. But it's well outside the flood zone. And there was something else. Indulge me here just for a second, if you wouldn't mind. Okay, and then related to the parking facility, the size of the facility, I don't know how we can really compare Wildcat Lake and the impacts that Wildcat Lake certainly does have at their boat launch. They have a significantly large parking area. This parking area itself is minimized for so many reasons, including the wetland, including the shoreline, and also including the small hand launch that is really going to control the people that would potentially use this. I think you're not going to see any power boat. Oh, and I remember the last thing I was going to mention then. So related to that, I think the parking space numbers and the traffic concern based on this particular project, not so much the traffic and the speeding traffic. We have no control over that, but that our reviewers did take a look in relation to traffic and impacts for a traffic study or things like that. This number of spots is not a trigger for requiring a traffic study, nor is it a matter for further permit review in relation to future requirement for a road approach. A road approach is a specific design that comes in off of a county road. Gold Creek Road is a county road. it will have to meet a specific design. And so when the grading permit is reviewed, that particular design, which they already have a design for it, they understand, the Fish and Wildlife understands the design criteria, and that particular roadway will come in. It's been analyzed for the associated curves, both north and south. And again, our traffic reviewers with Kitsap County Public Works did review and did provide that they felt it was going to be an approvable, but not currently approved, but that will happen at the future permit level, if that makes sense. And then lastly, Kitsap County also has a code compliance division. And in relation to, you know, concerns about parking or overnight parking or things like that, there will also be an avenue in relation to this particular project for the public to also call Kitsap One. And we have a regional call center with Kitsap One, and that phone number is 360-337-5777. Hope I remember that right. I think that's right. and there's also an email. So you can also email kitsap1 at kitsap.gov, and you'd be able to get through and say, hey, there is a camper parked here. We believe that these people are camping on property that they're not authorized to do so. We could then send a code compliance officer and then provide a way to get that taken care of and get that off the property. So we do have county resources as well through county code. And so if there's a code violation, that type of thing, that's also afforded. Let's see. And I believe that's it. Did you have any other questions?
Sure.
Of me? Yeah.
Yeah. Something that was brought up by several folks was the difference between the initial staff report and the revised staff report.
Yeah,
I don't recall major differences when I read through things, but I also, you know, sitting and reading 600 pages and, you know, maybe I missed it. But could you just speak to what the fundamental differences were
between
those two reports?
Right, yeah, because in that interim period, we had additional comments that came in. So we did try to attempt to answer every question that came in. It's not possible. We have to bundle them. There's no other way to really address it. I would say, you know, in relation to, the analysis, we did reanalyze a couple of points in Title 22-300. And under 22-300, there were a couple of elements that just in the wrapping up of the previous staff report that the oversight, you know, because we do have a peer internal peer review of our reports as well. And it had just been omitted. But we wanted to make sure that those points of code were also reassessed and redone. And the only other thing I think in relation to the community's questions about naming is that again in the staff report we did reference and with the understanding that that the 2011 Superior Court document had also addressed the lake naming and the questions of the lake naming, and Hopefully people do understand. I think people do understand the name of the lake. We've made every correction in the staff report that we could reference, other than other submittal items that, you know, we can't correct those items, but then documented and turned that into a recorrection of the revised staff report.
Okay, and then can you just touch on and clarify again, were this to be approved? I certainly have not made a decision one way or the other, but
yeah,
were it to be approved, the additional steps in terms of permitting, you just spoke to a road approach. I think you may have referenced a grading permit. Could you walk through what additional review would occur?
Sure. Yeah, absolutely. So the grading permit that we've recommended and will be required to be applied for is to address that particular work that's within the buffers. And so the related site work for the gravel driveway, the gravel parking area, the entrance driveway, the asphalt, all of those things, the design and the finished product for the entrance is also inspected by county inspection agents. And so we have a specification and it needs to meet those specifications. So, and this is for public safety too, because, when you leave a property, if you don't have adequate paving to exit the property onto the county road, we don't want people peeling out in gravel and causing a delay in their exiting the property. So these things are all done for safety purposes. They're also done for, again, I alluded to the fire marshal who has a specification for road surfacing and that type of thing, so that people can, if there's a rescue that needs to happen or anything like that, that there's the ability of the fire aid cars and things like that to be able to get onto the property. So all those elements, the grading, the initial inspection for the replanting and mitigation plan, all of those things will be part of the inspection. And then finally, one more point is that the county does have buffer signs. And so we do have buffer signs and provide wetland buffer signs to all of our applicants that are related to demarking wetland areas and things like that. So we will make wetland buffer signs available. And I think in relation to signage as well, the Fish and Wildlife will have, certainly will have signage on their kiosk that will provide guidance on rules, that type of thing. Let's see, trying to think if there's anything else.
Well, and while you're thinking as well, one issue that was brought up was a potential water line from the community club being impacted.
Yes, right.
Could you speak to how impacts are avoided, or if they occur, what happens, and any info you can provide?
Certainly, absolutely. Well, and that I think, and I've already made a note in relation to that water district. So we'll certainly require that outreach to occur to identify where the line is, that type of thing. My understanding was the line is up on Gold Creek Road, and this had been a concern related to some tree removal. But again, we're going to discover that, and I'll know. We'll provide a summary of our outreach that we're going to do with Puget Sound Energy. I really do feel that the tree removal is related to that, or the branch removal, or whatever is happening. But I am not aware of any proposed tree removal up on that roadway itself. But we'll certainly find out, and we'll have more for you on that.
Okay, so to that end, I'm up to 53, I believe, exhibits, 53 being the normal and accustomed tribal map you wanted to provide. So 54 would be the summary of outreach efforts.
Yes.
And is there anything else the county is hoping the record would be left open for that it wants to address or attend to?
I don't think so at this point. The last thing I may mention is in relation to the monitoring reports. We do require monitoring reports, which is part of our wetland code, but it's also incorporated in the Shoreline Master Program. And that's for monitoring reports to be provided by the end of each calendar year after the performance is done. So once the plants are planted and the initial weed abatement occurs, the invasives, et cetera, then we do require reports at year 1, 2, 3, and 5. And so it's a 5-year monitoring and maintenance requirement.
Okay. Were there other members of county staff you had intended on calling on, Mr. Hickok?
No, I didn't have any other staff involved. There's certainly been staff, an awful lot of staff review. As you know, there's probably seven different steps, you know, in relation to different departments or subdepartments in Kitsap County. Again, I alluded Kitsap County Public Works, our review for stormwater purposes is done internally by our development services and engineering reviewers. We have planners that review land use planning. We do initially send information again to all those other tribes and things like that with State Fish and Wildlife, State Department of Ecology. We also have then the shoreline review, environmental review, and then in relation to potential public trails, there's a review by Public Works for trail connectivity, which, you know, is not in the picture here, certainly. It's a significant review, and we did ask our stormwater reviewer to be available should any questions come up. And then, of course, if you have any additional review or clarification from any of the sub-departments, then we certainly can get any question answered.
Okay. Thank you. In terms of process, so how long in your mind would you need to be able to complete that outreach you just discussed? I'm trying to determine kind of next steps and the record, et cetera.
Oh, right. Yeah. Well, I certainly, the record's open for a week. I'm sure I can have that information, available okay. In relation to that tree removal. It does seem odd to me for sure. Yeah.
Okay. So the county intends that it will, within the next week, submit what I've identified as going to be exhibit 54. And Well, I think that then would cover the specific questions I had, and I'm going down my list here for county staff. My thought was I quickly wanted to check in with Alexandra Lawton one final time, and then actually with Amanda Walston at the very end.
Okay, very good. Thank you.
Hi, thank you. I just wanted to clarify some timing things. So here in Kitsap County, the record does get left open one additional week when the hybrid format or the Zoom format is used to ensure if folks had challenges participating, they're able to submit written comments in lieu of public testimony. So for folks that are in the room and on Zoom, to be clear, this is not a hope that folks resubmit or submit additional comments repeating what they've already repeated, but if you had concerns that you were not able to convey during the public testimony portion of the hearing, please reach out to county staff and they can clarify how you can participate. That said, Ms. Lawton, I wanted to see if there was anything you were hoping to have the record left open to address or not. I just want to make sure that you are given that opportunity.
Yes, thank you. Actually, there is. I am planning on sending in for an exhibit the cultural resource letters that we sent out as part of the SEPA documentation, SEPA review. I will get a hold of those and I will submit them to, I believe, Amanda. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'll submit them to Amanda as soon as I get those to have those as part of the record as well.
Okay, so placeholder exhibit 55, I'll note as additional information from WDFW. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Okay, so in terms of timing, just speaking to the applicant, traditionally I do try to turn around and produce a decision within 10 business days of the record closing. I do note with, the sheer number of folks that have participated and the size of the submitted exhibits, this might take a little bit longer, but just wanted to ensure that that's not going to create major issues in terms of the applicant team if it does take me more than, I'm not saying it's going to take months, it just might take an extra few days to produce a decision. Any concern about that?
No concerns there.
Okay, great. Anything further from the applicants?
No, we just want to thank everybody for coming and we really appreciate all the comments and concerns we've heard.
Okay, thank you. So finally, I wanted to turn to our clerk, Amanda Walston, and this is somewhat unusual, but we'll swear Amanda in. And I think you're muted, but maybe that's on purpose. But do you swear affirm to tell the truth in the testimony you give here today?
I do.
Thank you. And could you just spell your name for the record?
Amanda, A-M-A-N-D-A. Walston is W-A-L-S-T-O-N.
Thank you, Ms. Walston. So first, I just want to check, because you're much better at keeping track, I know, than I am, but did my numbering and number of exhibits, is that seemingly going to line up with what you're trying to keep track of?
It does. We're up okay. Through 55 with that last placeholder.
Excellent. Okay. So the intent then is that the record is left open. Again, this is a procedural sort of thing to ensure that there were no tech problems. So if folks had tech issues, what's a good way they can reach out, a good contact information for them to say, I tried to participate on Zoom and couldn't, and this is what I wanted to say. Is there a good email you can provide for folks?
Sure. My direct email is awalston, it's A-W-A-L-S-T-O-N at kitsap.gov. And if there's comments or questions, those can be sent directly to me. Yeah, that's probably the best way.
Okay. And then finally, once the record closes and I produce my decision, can you just speak to how folks that are interested in seeing that decision would be able to receive a copy, or if it's available on the county's website, or just that issue so that folks can stay in the know, as it were?
Sure, we do a little bit of all of that. Everybody who's listed as an interested party will receive a copy of the notice of decision, which contains the hearing examiner's full decision, as well as a formal cover page stating the outcome. And it's also posted on our county website on the hearing examiner page. Right next to, as you scroll down to look at the hearing and the agenda today, there's a staff report listed with a link, and then there's also a link that will appear with the notice of decision right next to it. So it can be found that way also. If anybody is not listed as an interested party yet, or they haven't testified or haven't provided an email address or some way of contacting me today, they can also email me again at awalston@kitsap.gov to be added as an interested party. And when it does go out, I can do that too.
Okay, great. Thank you.
I was also going to say, if we only have a hard copy, like a physical mailing address, we do mail physical copies if we don't have another form of contact. So.
Okay, great. And then the final thing was in terms of the video, or was I correct that it's published on the BCAT, and it, maybe you could just explain that real quick.
It is the Bremerton Kitsap Access Television. They have a website that they host all of the, they have the government meeting section. And so the video of this is usually available definitely by the next day, sometimes even by the end of the day. And so that can be found there. And then we also post a link to the video and then also an audio recording on the Kitsap County Hearing Examiner webpage too. So you'll be able to watch it, you can listen to it. And then actually BCAT will run it on their Access Television channel. And I apologize, I think it might run tomorrow at 10 o'clock.
Okay.
But anyway, they have it listed in their regular programming. So it'll show up as Kitsap County Hearing Examiner. So.
Okay, great. Well, thank you for that information. I believe then with that, we can conclude our hearing today. And just to clarify, the record is being left open an additional week for a few specific reasons. One is I had previously allowed John Bonin, representing several members of the public, the group there, I had told him he could submit a written sort of closing legal arguments. So that will be one of the things. And then the additional exhibits that we discussed, including some outreach that Steve Heacock wanted to perform. But all of that will essentially be provided or included in the record here in the next week. And then the record itself will close at that point, and hopefully 2-3 weeks after that, I'll be able to issue my decision. And Amanda just explained how folks will be able to see that decision. So with that, we're going to end today's hearing. I thank everyone for taking the time to participate. Also, thank everyone for being so respectful to everyone involved. That's always great to see. And I wish everyone safety and good health moving forward, regardless of any specific outcome. Thank you, everybody.
Thank you.